men need suffering. It's something that we need. And boxing teaches you not to shy away from that suffering. That's when I started becoming successful in life. When I woke up and just decided to suffer. At one point, a kid just goes, "You're fat." I was like, "Fuck, I'm a cunt." All right, burpees, you fucker. That generation of men created more broken men than any other generation in history. The dynamic of me being paid is now I'm being paid to turn into a weapon. I always had a problem with my ego. And even when I was 150 kilos, I was like, I'm still a fucking man. I still got it, but I didn't, absolutely didn't.
Welcome to the Uncensored Podcast. Welcome to the Uncensored Podcast.
Welcome to the Uncensored Podcast. When did men stop being men? On today's episode of Uncensored, I bring you a top heavyweight Australian boxer, an entrepreneur, and the owner of Hammer Boxing Academy. I've known Hayes since the age of 14, which is coming up to 20 years now, guys, and you know, I've always admired his alpha male status, you know, the attitude he has towards things and the fact that he never takes a backward step. So I'm really excited for this conversation, guys. We're going to get deep, dark, and just open and vulnerable with you guys. So Hayes, welcome to the podcast, mate.
Cheers, bro. Thank you.
Because I know you're strapped for time, so I don't want to drag this podcast out, mate, but I really want to talk about the backstory, you know, who you were growing up.
From a young age, I was always sort of like the bigger kid, but I can't say that I was always that sort of physical alpha male. I was actually quite a timid kid. I'm getting into a fight when I was 11. I got beaten up at Wet n Wild, and that's what sort of kicked me into gear to learning how to defend myself. I went from being a very timid kid to, sort of just what I am today.
So when you say you learned that lesson, was it, I'd love to unpack the story. Were you being bullied? Was it just a thing that happened? Like what was the experience?
I was at Wet n Wild with my family, being 11 years old, and a couple of teenagers spat on my sister and just being, I was like, "Hey, pull your fucking head in."
Yeah.
And, obviously, just being kids, bro, they were looking for trouble. So they followed me, got me alone. There was probably about four or five of them. They just sort of beat me up. And it's not like any of it hurt, man. I think the thing that hurt the most was trying to look my dad in the eye afterwards, you know. And my dad was very hard, man. He sort of beat me a bit when I was a kid. So having to then say to my dad, "Oh, fuck, I was a bit of a pussy and I cried and I got beaten up and stuff like that." That was tough. I sort of decided that day that I didn't ever want to feel like that again. So started learning how to fight and started fighting heaps.
Cool. And that was the age of 11. When you said you started to learn how to fight at that age, were you like training somewhere? Were you just Googling things? Okay, how'd that happen?
So my father started boxing in 95, I think it was. I was 5 years old. So I'd been around boxing my whole life. But it wasn't until 11, after getting beaten up, then that my father sort of started teaching me how to fight. Before that, I was playing rugby league.
Yep.
So that was my goal and focus. And then, after getting beaten up, that's when my dad said, "Well, you've got to fucking learn how to fight." That's when he started teaching me.
Did you have control over it at that age, or then, you know, when you're saying playing football, testosterone's flowing, 14, 15, were you angry looking for physicality all the time, or was it more of, "I've just got this in my back pocket when I need it"?
I don't think I've ever, no, okay, no, I can't say that. When I was young, I was seeking approval from my father. That's all it was. I didn't want to fight. I didn't want to box. I couldn't fathom how another human being could punch another human being in the face. That just it was such a foreign thought to me that a human could want to hurt another human. That was really weird for me. So the whole time I was boxing, even when I was fighting, even as an amateur, when I started fighting when I was like 15, 16, I was only doing it to try and impress my dad, just trying to earn that respect from my father. That was all it was ever. And it sucked. It made it hard, man. Like, it's hard to put yourself through the training, the sparring, getting beaten up when it's not for you. Yeah. If it's not for you, man, it's tough. It's tough to do. Sort of makes you question a few things. So Yeah, I was only ever looking for approval from my father. I was never angry or wanting to hurt people.
Yeah. And so what age did you, I guess two-part question, right? Because obviously you got to a point where you then discovered the love for the art of boxing and obviously dropped the need to be approved. Did they come together or was it kind of just a maturity thing? Let's start with the dropping the approval thing. At what point did you sort of just go, I don't need you to approve you because I approve me?
It wasn't long ago, man.
Yeah? It carried on. And this is a good story because a lot of people probably gone through it.
Even when I turned professional at 21, couldn't get many fights due to the pedigree I had as an amateur. So I fought the Queensland heavyweight champ my first fight, knocked him out. Then later I fought a former Scottish champion, knocked him out. So it was, even then it was not so much my dad. My dad sort of left my life then, but it was just approval from others. I wanted everyone to think I was cool and tough and he's the top guy.
Which is just, it's normal for boys at that age, right?
It is. But I feel like I didn't progress until I no longer cared about that shit.
Yeah.
You know, when it was no longer for ego and it was all for me. This is just something that I want to do. For me, I'm not out here to impress anyone. I'm not out here to try and stake my claim over anyone per se. It's more just I get to do what I love doing. I love violence. It's what I love doing now.
So take me on that in-between journey, right? Because people are probably listening to this going, how did the guy that couldn't fathom how two humans could punch each other turn into a guy that goes, now I adore the art of violence? Mm. What was that process in between like to have? Because that's obviously a drastic shift of, I can't fathom how they even do it, let alone do it myself, to now I admire the art of it.
Yeah, so there was always this, as I got older, there was this sort of battle within me that would toss up between, I enjoy the art of violence, but I don't want to be a bad person. And from a young age, all men have this drilled into their head that violence is bad. It's a bad thing. And you succumbing to those urges to be violent means you're a bad person. It demonizes men for the hormones that we have. And it was when I accepted myself for my violence that things really changed for me. And that is when I sort of, I no longer needed gratification from anyone. It was just, I accept myself for who I am, for what I am. And bro, to be honest, that's when I calmed down a lot too, when I accepted that, look, I'm a violent man, I'm not a bad person, but I'm an extremely violent human being.
Yeah.
But that doesn't sort of determine the content of my character or my integrity. And once I accepted that, because I had that battle in me for a long time, and about 7 years ago, fighting with that battle gave me a lot of depression, a lot of anxiety, and I became suicidal. Made an attempt on my life, which was the last time I ever self-harmed. I opened my throat with a blade, started bleeding out on the bathroom floor, got picked up by an ambulance. I don't think I wanted to die, but I wanted to hurt because I felt bad for my need or want or feeling of being that violent being. So I was looking for a way out. The world didn't make sense to me. It wasn't until after that I sort of started accepting myself for who I am.
No, I appreciate that vulnerability. Thank you for sharing. Was it hard to control, you know, obviously being an amateur fighter in those early stages mixed with the testosterone of a man trying to understand who I am, how to control it? Because like you said earlier, I don't know the exact saying. I believe it's better to be a warrior in a garden than a gardener in a war or something like that. And that's exactly who you are now. Was it harder to control that at the start when you first learned how to fight and you had a reputation of someone that could knock someone out? Did you want to go to surface, for example, and prove it? You know,
I couldn't say that it was harder to control, but it was. I was a lot more trigger happy.
Yep.
It was like a when I was that young, because I started bouncing when I was 18. So from the age of 18, I was doing security in nightclubs and surface and stuff like that, and I was fighting a lot. I was fighting a lot, and a lot of the time I didn't need to. I didn't have to. But I sort of did, again, I was just seeking approval, man. Yep. I was just beating people up.
But it's like, if you've got a fast car, you drive it fast. If you can throw your hands, it's, yeah. I get it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I'm obviously of no close physicality, nature and stuff or close to you, but still from talking from a guy's perspective, it's like, if you've got it, you want to flaunt it.
Yeah.
And the thing with violence, I guess, is it's a young age, you don't really realize, and that's why you see a lot of shit things with people making mistakes. You don't realize the violence obviously can go too far, and it's obviously, well, how do I control this beast and use it for people to understand versus, you know, too many people probably do the wrong thing and go on for too long.
Yeah, that's a good point. I did notice that when I wasn't fighting, when I wasn't constantly training, had that discipline, and I was fighting, and I was getting a good outlet and a safe environment.
Yeah.
That's when I became a lot more trigger happy. Right. So it was always when I, and man, to be honest, that was when I was a lot more depressed too. If I wasn't fighting and constantly releasing the testosterone and those urges, that's when I became very destructive as a man. That's when I became very toxic as a man.
Yep. No, that's why, because a lot of people out there, they're so against, I don't want my child going and training, and we'll touch on your gym and how many, you know, kids' lives you've changed, because I think that is the biggest difference when, sparring is just a good release, you know, for someone who just wants to throw hands and work up a workout versus building it up, and then you go to the wrong thing and you king hit someone, or you do the wrong thing out in the street, and all of a sudden you're doing time behind bars. So I want to sort of go into, from the amateur stage, was there a point, obviously because you were playing football, you were good at football, you know, you had the size, the physicality. Was that ever a focal point where you wanted to make football a career, or once you started putting the gloves on? Oh,
yeah, 100%. 100%, yeah. I thought I was going to play NRL, bro. I did. I was making rep teams from a young age. You know, playing. I played at Keebra Park. I was a starting prop for them. I was in, like, Gold Coast Titans development squads, making rep teams and stuff like that. And that's what I thought I was going to do. And then... oh, look, I mean, I can't say if this is true or not, but I like to believe the story back then. I was like, oh, politics, fucking other people are getting picked instead of me. It's all fucking politics, all bullshit. Looking back, it probably wasn't. Probably wasn't. Being a man now and looking back at it, it probably wasn't. That was just an excuse for my bruised ego.
Yep.
But yeah, I stopped making teams, and I think it was at like sort of 15. I'd been training constantly in boxing because my dad was a fucking boxer, so... at 15, dad goes, fuck it, do you just want to give boxing a go? And I was like, yeah, all right, we'll have a crack. And I think it was like 11 months later I became the Australian champion.
Yeah. So into that boxing journey now, from a boxing perspective, what points do you grow? Is it through losses? Is it through rewatching 100%. Yourself? When do you find you understand the most about who you are as a fighter?
Man, as a whole, it is from suffering and choosing to suffer, and that's what I found with my gym. The more I made these boys suffer together, the stronger their bond became as men. Like it was clicky. There was a group of boys, and they sort of hung around in their groups. And it wasn't until I started trying to fucking break these kids, like make them do heel sprint after heel sprint. And these circuits that I used to do with the kettlebell till they're almost fucking crying, that they sort of started molding in together. Men need suffering. It's something that we need. And boxing teaches you not to shy away from that suffering. That's where you need to be successful in life. That's when I started becoming successful in life. When I woke up and just decided to suffer. Just put myself through a little bit of suffering every fucking day, and then I can literally conquer anything that is put in front of me. And that, yeah, so that having that mental capacity to withstand and proceed through the suffering, which is what we call discipline ultimately. That was sort of key.
What was your aha moment? Do you remember any specific moment, whether it be recently or way back, where you kind of had your, like, this is going to challenge me. Like, this is my aha moment. If I really want to make this happen, like, this is what I have. Was there things that were breaking you that you were like, fuck, this is just hard. Like, what do I have to crack through in order to get to that next phase? Do you remember any specific moments or experiences?
Because I've always been gifted in violence. I used it as an excuse. It was always, oh yeah, I could be a world champion, but just life got in the way. Yep. I used that shit as an excuse. And then I opened a boxing gym, and it was me telling the boys, stop being fucking pussies and just go for your fucking run, get fit, do this. And I was sitting there at 150 kilos saying, get fit, you fucking little pussies. And it was just, at one point, a kid just goes, you're fat. I was like, you fucking little cunt. All right, burpees, you fucker. But I was like, yeah, fair. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough. And since then, I've lost like 24 kilos.
it's crazy that's all it takes, right? Because I guess now you, and we'll touch on the gym a bit later on, but like now you view yourself, I'm not just a fighter, I'm an idol. Right, and it's just like if I want people to look up to me and respect
that's
me,
it,
I
that's
have to
it.
Embody what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I feel there's a big shift in society happening towards more masculine men, and I felt like I had to take the lead. I had to take the lead by example, and be like, okay, well, fuck, if I'm telling these boys they got to stop being pussies, and they've got to do this, and they've got to do that, and they have to put themselves in vulnerable positions and test themselves, then I have to do that too. Mm. That's why I started fighting
again. And it's funny that you think about it, like if someone said 10 years ago, when you're this stage in your life, a 10-year-old, 12-year-old is going to be the reason that you change the dynamic, you'd laugh at it. But it's crazy that like small little moments that at the time you're just like, shut up, you little dickhead. That you think back on now, you're like, if you didn't say that, would I be in this position? So I want to go back to when you were at that weight. And I remember I sponsored you on a fight. I think it's like maybe 7 or 8 years ago now, and we flew down to Sydney and we did some press and we had this kind of fun. But you were even saying back then, like, because who you are then to who you are now, well different fighters, well different mentalities.
Yeah.
What was it just, you know, and if you don't mind me saying, obviously you were on the heavier side of things. You had a massive punch, but obviously cardio wasn't where it should have been. Was that an attitude thing, like for you to go into a fight and just be like, I'm just going to knock this guy out? Did you care? Yeah, like, what was the mindset then?
Talent is a double-edged blade, okay? Talent only means anything if you are fucking fit enough and disciplined enough to do something with it. And I wasn't. I never was. I was very talented. When I won the Australian Junior Heavyweight, Super Heavyweight title when I was 17, that was a first-round knockout. You know, in the final of the Australian title, it was a first-round knockout. That's just what I did, so having that shot, that big punch and the good counters in my back pocket, I sort of just relied on it.
Do you become entitled? You fight, like, because I guess if you just knock everyone out in the first round, that's not your fault. That's obviously an attribute. Take my punch better.
Yep.
But does that ever damage you as a boxer? Like, well, if I don't get 100%. Past the first round, how do I know if I can go round seven?
Because it was like, I mean, even now, as a professional, I'm 6 wins, 1 loss, 1 draw. My 6 wins have been by knockout.
Yeah.
So it's either I knock them out, or I don't win.
Yeah.
So, it's definitely something that that needs to be worked on. And that's when I sort of started telling the boys, if you're not fit, you shit. And then I was like, well, fuck, I'm not fit. So I kind of got to do something here. So, yeah.
No, I love the attitude about it, because it is as a vocal man yourself and someone who's alpha and is always going to speak his opinion, when you embody that opinion, I think it shifts the level of respect, and especially, you know, young guys that want to sort of look up to you, they might not have a father figure, they might not have, you know, someone who can help them control bullying and things like this, which are obviously important things that they're going to go through at school. Mm-hmm. When you're an embodiment of that, I guess you allow them to feel vulnerable in knowing that you're guiding them in the right area. So I love that. I want to know, so that, you know, you had that fight back then at that weight, you got injured. Mm-hmm. Was there a moment where you were like, I'm not good enough anymore. I'm done with this. I'm going to quit.
Plenty.
Yeah.
Plenty. I have them now.
Yeah.
I'm in the best physical shape I've ever been in my life. I'm the strongest, fittest, most disciplined I've ever been, and I still have them every camp, every single fucking camp.
Which is a good thing, again, for people listening.
Every single camp.
And you're facing them, right? What gets you through that? Do you have a different reason every single time? Like, say, go back 7 years when you lost that fight, I think you dislocated your shoulder or something in the fight. You're 150 odd kilo. Do you just go, like, it's too hard to lose the weight? I don't want to get into shape anymore. I'm done with boxing. Like, what?
It's just very easy to fall into. No, because I always had a problem with my ego. And even when I was 150 kilos, I was like, I'm still the fucking man. I still got it, but I didn't, absolutely didn't. Like, I don't feel like I have it now, you know. But it's very easy to slip into being the fucking storyteller and be like, yeah, I could have been this, I could have been that, but.
Captain victim.
Yep.
Been there.
So, it was just, that was something that was easy to fall into. And and it's real comfy there. It's real cozy there.
Very.
And it's like mummy holding you and fucking telling you everything's okay, but. It's not.
Was it a particular person? Was it a family member? Was it just self-reflection? Because when you're stuck in that moment, it's a lot easier to stay there than go, you know what, get your ass out, get healthy, get fit, let's get back in the ring.
Yeah.
What was it? Do you have specific moments that you can recall?
There's a couple. I remember one time, because I still thought I was a fucking athlete. And I remember one time I woke up and I was like, the fuck's that on my lower back? And I reached around and it was my fucking upper back. I had back tits.
Right.
And I was like, all right, something needs to be fucking done. Yeah. To be honest, the thing that sort of drove me to open the gym and get back into fighting and stuff like that was because I opened the gym during COVID. Hey. So during COVID, when gyms weren't allowed to be open, that's when I fucking opened a boxing gym. But I'd been losing jobs for whatever reason. So I went to the more underground side of work. And I was involved with heavy people doing heavy things. And I got caught. We got caught. And that was sort of a bit of a shock to the system. So that was sort of like, oh, fuck, okay. So, I'm not invincible. I could go to jail for a very long time and not see my children again until they're out of fucking school. So that was sort of a bit of a wake-up call. And I started just trying anything after that, just doing any sort of job, working for people and just losing jobs, people not being reliable, shit falling through. And when you've got three kids and a partner at home and we're trying to feed everyone, then you're in the middle of a fucking pandemic. I was just like, fuck, I'm sick of fucking working for other cunts. Mm. I'm sick of working for other people and them being the reason that I can't feed my family or how I look being a reason that I can't feed my family. So that's when I started training people boxing at a park. And one of them goes, a good friend of mine, Jesse Malcolm, he goes, why have you never opened a boxing gym? I was like, because I don't have a spare fucking 50 grand to do it. And he's like, I do. And we sort of left it at that. And I was like, oh, yeah, sick. And I went home and told Talia. And she goes, sweet, all right, done. Starts fucking typing up a fucking business plan. And so we got together, done this whole business plan. And then it was like 2 days later, I saw them again at the park for training. I was like, here you go. They're like, what's this? It's like, it's a business plan for a boxing gym. And they're like, oh, fuck, you're serious? I was like, yeah, bro. So, he's like, all right, look, I'm not going to put in 50. He goes, I'll put in half, you put in half. And I was like, yeah, sweet, cool, done. I did not have $25,000. You know, this is the middle of COVID. I was fat as fuck, wasn't training. Just had surgery on my shoulder, the shoulder dislocation. So I just had the surgery. Could barely do anything. So... I just started selling household items, doing little cash jobs here and there, whatever it was, man. Like I was wrapping cars, I was fucking, we were selling clothes, we were selling shit out of the house. I had a Beamer, a matte black Beamer. I sold that, just fucking dumped everything and poured everything into Starting the gym, got the 25K in a couple of months. And then, yeah, the rest is history.
And that speaks volumes to entrepreneur in a sense of some people are just, there's a word I learned many years ago called psychologically unemployable. Mm-hmm. And I understand I got fired from 13 jobs in 2 years before I realized that working isn't for me. I haven't worked for anyone else in 7 years now. I was bankrupt and now I live a pretty good life in a pretty nice house just because you just find a way to do shit, yeah. You know, through that kind of attitude.
When did you get bankrupt?
2012.
So we're 22.
Correct. 10 years ago. Yep. Yeah, it's 22 years old.
Best time to get bankrupt.
It was handy because I owned nothing. But same deal as you, right? I thought I was the cool guy because I had the V8 car and this and that. And then I had to sell it and drive a hatchback that was too small for me to sit in. My head was hunched.
I'm still driving a shit car.
Right.
I've got five businesses now. I'm still driving a shit car.
But now you're at a point where you don't care. Back then when you drove a shit car, when you got the ego, you feel like people are going to look at you and gossip. And I got to a point where I literally put a towel on my window. So if I drove past people, they wouldn't know it was me. Because I'm 6'6", right? I'm like, my head was hunched. I bought a tiny car because I had no money. But I had to face that humiliation because I put me and Kayla in a shit position and that was my, I didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. But like same mindset as you, when you just figure it out because you just, working for someone's just not, I'd rather have 50 grand a year hustling myself than 200 grand a year being employed. 100%. Like it's just,
100%.
Freedom is more important.
Like again, I feel like that comes back to that sort of alpha man, sort of divine masculine being. Like I'm the king.
Yeah.
I'm the king. Like, this is my kingdom. I'm building this shit. I'm not fucking working for you. Mm. I'm not your jester. Mm. I'm building my empire. Sorry, bro. Yeah, so.
But there's men that are going to listen to this that they want to do the same thing, but they're controlled by the fear of what if it doesn't work?
Yep.
And you, me, like some of us, we just don't, like, you just can't be controlled by those fears. I mean, you've had the children, you've had the family. If it didn't work, it damages you just as much as it damages them. But if you get controlled by those fears, well, you're not where you are now.
Fear is useful.
Correct.
Fear is useful. It's one of the best motivators. You know, it is okay to feel fear. Like, I've feared every man I've ever fought. Mm. It hasn't stopped me from knocking them out. Mm. Fear is useful. It is okay to feel fear. It is not okay to fear fear.
Yes,
it's a useful tool, great motivator. It's needed, and the overcoming of it teaches you more about yourself than the victory thereafter.
Correct. I think a sense of entitlement is what weakens society, and we'll dive into a few of those topics.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a quick break. And if you're enjoying yourself, which I'm sure you are, locate that subscribe button because there is plenty more juice coming your way.
And yeah, no, I agree. I think people, so I hate entitlement. And what I mean by that is I think people entitle themselves. It doesn't come down to this, oh, you grew up with a rich family, you're entitled. That's irrelevant because people can't control that. But I think people, when they're weak on themselves, they create a sense of entitlement around, I don't want to do that, I don't have to do that. And even though it doesn't change their life, I think that entitlement really just comes down to fear. And so I want to get a little controversial here because I love it and I know you love it and the people are going to vibe it. We speak a lot, and if people that you guys follow, Hayes, he speaks a lot about, you know, the alpha male and you know, you guys, if you follow me, you know my stance on this gender-specific shit and people doing this and people doing that. And I'm not a fan of feminine blokes and things like that, but you're obviously me times 10 when it comes to speaking about this out loud. What do you think changed? And what part of society, because we grew up in the same era, right? And back then, you were allowed to get hit. You come home, your dad smacked you. Now dad smacks you, gets locked up for 6 months.
Mm.
What the fuck happened to society?
Okay, so I feel the downfall of men, masculine men in modern society was ultimately when we started caring more about what women thought than what other men thought. Because all those things like smacking children, this and that. Now, like I'm doing gentle parenting now. I've got three daughters. I do gentle parenting now. I didn't for my first And it didn't work. However, I was raised very rough. And I think I'm all right. I'm probably not, but I think I am. So it was like caring more about what women thought than what your fellow man thought. That I reckon that was the downfall of men. Okay, you're doing this to impress women. Doing your hair, bro. Like, I mean, fucking look at me. Like, I do not care. I do not care to fit social norms on what people think are attractive. It means nothing to me. I care more about, like, I feel my essence of attraction or attractiveness, if I even have it, is virtue based and deed based. I don't think it has anything to do with my appearance.
Yeah.
Because I just don't fucking care about that stuff. Now, when men go out of their way to, you know, and I'm like, I don't care if you're a metrosexual man, you look after your health and this and that, and do your nails and whatever, you know, like, I don't fucking care. But it to me, too much of that leads to only trying to impress women and not trying to impress your fellow man. Like, bro, I don't care if your nails are done. Can you fucking change your tire?
Yeah.
Like, I don't care if your hair looks good. Can you fucking fight, cunt? Like,
yeah.
You're going to have my back if 10 cunts try fucking jump me? That's what I care about. I don't give a fuck about anything else. There's nothing like that. Like, and you said things about, like, the feminine man. Now, feminine traits are needed in men. There is a balance that is required. But I don't think that balance is 50-50. I feel like that's way too much. It's got to be more like a 80-20 balance or a 90-10 balance where 80% mask, 20% femme, or 90% mask, 10% femme, in a man. And I think it's the reverse for women. There has to be a level of compassion and empathy and creativeness in men, which are divine feminine traits. Else we're just like our fathers.
Yeah.
Okay. And that wasn't the greatest era. They did what they could, but that generation of men created more broken men than any other generation in history. And I think it's because that was then coupled with anytime you go into hyper-masculine, the opposite has to go into hyper as well. So you go hyper-masculine, then there has to be hyper-feminine. Okay, so when you go into hyper-masculine, you've got men that are just hyper-masculine to a point where, I won't say toxic, but to a point where it's almost damaging. Then the feminine comes in at the exact same counterpart. And that's when you get overprotective mothers, and that's when these more feminine ideals sort of started getting pushed onto people. And yeah, I feel like that was the downfall.
It just seems to be happening. Like, what do you think gave it air? Because, like, when we grew up, we came through our 20s, you know, that part. And for the most part, a lot of the stuff that happens in the world right now, it didn't exist. It wasn't even a conversational point. If it happened back then, we'd have been like, what the fuck are you even talking about? Now, when I'm saying sense of, you know, blokes identifying as women and whatever the hell's going on in the world, like, what do you think shifted the man just being the man, the alpha, it's my house, I'll protect it, to now we live in a world where it wouldn't surprise me if half the houses in Australia got broken into, the wife would throw the first punch.
Feminism.
Like, you think it just...
It was the act of yeah, feminism, women trying to fight for... If you, like, I mean, right, so if you get a bunch of women together going, we don't need our men, so they kick them out. Okay, cool. All right, sweet. So now you've got a broken home where schools then have to raise the children. It's not a mother. It's not a mother with good value trying to raise children. It's now a mother that's trying to be hyper-masculine, work by herself, provide, come home, stressed as fuck because she's not doing what she naturally should be doing.
Yep.
And taking that out on the kids. Or then you've got a father that's absent. So they're not getting any of the healthy masculine from the father. I reckon it was feminism.
And then they try and create their masculinity by making up for it by fighting and getting in trouble and the popularity, the boys like me. That's my sense of trying to create masculinity. I agree entirely in a sense of just I kind of lost my train of what I wanted to say, but the women. It's like a defense mechanism in a sense. If it's a cry for help, I want a man, but we push it too far where we then end up deflecting what we want because we end up sort of creating this anger toward it when at the end of the day it's just it's a cry for attention because I want the help. Yep. And yep. I think it's vice versa. I think a man needs a woman
100%
just as much. We just show it in a less standoffish way, I guess.
Well, that's because we are 80-20 mask to feminine. We show love. We do things objectively, women do things subjectively. Yeah. So showing love for us is things like, hey, look, I'm willing to give my fucking life if someone comes through that door tonight. I'm going to work 12 hours a fucking day busting my balls so that you don't have to fucking break your back doing whatever the fuck you want to do. That's how we show love. I do think it should be voiced a bit. We show love objectively.
Do you think the anxiety, because there seems to be a big batch of anxiety, depression, all these words thrown around with men having, do you think with all the different, voices in the world, categorizing this, categorizing that, it puts men in a spot where they're then confused to value themselves?
100%. 100%. I feel like when, as I said, with us caring more about what women thought, that was in regards to masculine things. And like here, my pet fucking hate, man, is the saying, be the bigger man and walk away. Okay. That does my fucking head in, okay? Because you are never bigger for suppressing the hormones that make you who you are. And we have constantly, from day one, demonized men for violence, for being masculine, for testosterone. We demonize them. Be the bigger man and walk away. That's literally just saying, like saying, be the bigger woman and stop fucking crying. Like that's your reaction to your situation. Women get emotional, they cry. Be the bigger woman and stop fucking crying. If you said that, you'd be a fucking piece of shit. But everyone's happy to throw around, be the bigger man and walk away. You are never bigger for suppressing the hormones that make you a man, ever. There's like, and it's not like, I'm not telling you just go and fucking punch on with every cunt, okay? But there's a better way around it. You'd be like, bro, you're going to get your head fucking punched in the 7 of them. Like, fucking be smart. Think objectively. Have a fucking look, man. Use your head. Be the bigger man and walk away is one of my pet peeves, man. I can't stand that.
No, because all this just comes down to is just your values in, at the end of the day, not falling victim to the noise around the current world we live in and where people are trying to suppress people and create 4,000 different cultures, 4,000 different genders, like all this.
Mm.
All of this is just a way to confuse people into forgetting who they really are and what made them who they are. And so I want to now move into how you share the message, because obviously you opened a gym. Mm-hmm. People now come to you, and to most of these boys, you're a god, you're an idol, you're a father figure, you could be whatever, right? We don't know their situation, but we all have been looking up to someone of that nature. And so you get given that responsibility, whether you ask for it or not, it's yours. How do you best find, you lead the boys from different, do you is it ages with how you want to sort of introduce them to things, or do you lead the guys?
Yeah, it's tough. It is tough. Because then you also have parents, and it's something that I've spoken to parents about. I was like, look, I understand that this is your child, and thank you for trusting me with your child, but in here, this is my world.
Yep.
And I would like a lot of mothers bring me this, and they're single mothers or mothers that have children that are, the father does FIFO, works away. So the father's not around a lot, and they're like, oh, he's just a bit soft, yada, yada, yada. So they'll bring me the kids, and then something will happen, and then they'll come sprinting in to baby them. It's like, why did you bring him here? Like, you brought him here for him to harden up or whatever. I don't really like the term, but to harden up. So you need to take a fucking step back and let me do what you're paying me to do, essentially. Because there's not a lot of technique or tactics that I can teach a 5-year-old, but there are a couple of little life lessons and a couple of little wins that I can get them. Yeah. Falling over, hurting yourself. All right, take a deep breath, stand up. Right, look how brave you are. Look how strong you are.
Correct.
Instead of going, oh, you're right, darling.
And we see that a lot, right? Oh, my God, let's get you to the hospital. Let's put a Band-Aid on. And now we condition them that every time this happens, this is how you react.
Yeah. So, yeah, that that age is tough. When they're in beginners, I'm pretty nice to beginners. Hey, boys. Beginners, I'm pretty nice. But as soon as you're in the advanced class, I'm not nice. I'm not nice. Hey.
And for break it down, for those that might not be like, what do you mean he's not nice to his students? You mean not nice in like, well, now we're at the age where you're going to learn the art and the discipline I'm not nice as in your excuses aren't valid.
So it's well, yeah, I mean, fucking all of the above. But, you know, at that younger age, they're paying me for those little wins, teach their child. I want them to have fun. They have fun. But I also got to try and get them a couple of little wins or standing up for themselves, stuff like that. When it comes to the advanced class, the dynamic of me being paid is now I'm being paid to turn you into a weapon.
Yeah.
And weapons aren't soft. They're not soft instruments. Weapons are hard instruments. So I'm not soft. I'm not soft. Yeah, that's all it is there. So, like, I'll hear people whinge. They'll say, oh, fuck up.
Did you have to learn how to, share the communication in a way that your message gets across and they understand it? Or was it very black and white?
It's very black and white. It's, all right, boys, go get a drink. And then they'll be there for a couple of seconds too long. I'm like, this is not a fucking tea party. Can't get the fuck back.
Yeah.
It's very straight.
Back just making it just, aware. Just straight discipline. Yep.
Yep. 100%.
Let's talk into, before we get into your one last thing about the gym, what's been the biggest, I guess from a positive side of things, what's been the biggest shift in you since owning the gym, since taking the responsibility of going, well, these guys now look at me at a level, now I can't drop the ball, I can't get caught, I can't get in trouble, I can't do this because then they're going to think it's okay for them to do it. What's been the biggest lesson since taking on the responsibility of these boys looking at you now at the level that they look at you? Has it shifted you? Has it changed how you operate as a man, as a coach, as a dad, how you foreseen in the public eye? Because obviously now you do it. Like if you walk out and you just king hit three dudes in surface, the boys would be like, well, I can do that because coach can do it. So it's obviously shifted your behavioral decisions or what's been the biggest sort of aha moment?
Yeah, to an extent. Yeah, that's a good question. I feel like a lot of the lessons I try to tell them have always just been words, and now I'm sort of like, well, fuck, now I've got to sort of live it. So I have to actively I'm trying to actively be that role model. And to be honest, I don't think I'm a great role model. I really don't. If you're looking for role models, probably look for someone else. I'm angry and I swear and I'm rude looking. But I'm real. I'll be real. I'll always be real.
But that's because you care, right? So when people listen, 100%. They're like, oh, why would I send my kids to angry? Like, he's not, because of the level of care, like the level of they're here, it's my responsibility to get these boys somewhere.
That
because my level of care, right?
Definitely. And I think it's just a lot of, trying to be what I needed when I was younger, when I was dealing with my father, stuff like that, just little things.
So you're embodying what? So it's a two-part question, right? Because if you had that back then, you might not be who you are now because the lessons have guided you. So it's like, I want to be who I needed, but I'm glad I didn't have.
Yeah, look, I love my father. And I do know now that he was just trying to deal with his upbringing and a lot of things confused him, and I was the oldest boy. So I had an older sister. We've got two younger brothers. Younger brothers were babied. Older sister's the only girl. So everything came on me. I do now know that dad would probably just have a tough day, and he was just looking for a release because he couldn't find it the way that we can now.
I guess in that generation also sharing emotion was very 100%. Frowned upon if you're a guy and you share vulnerability, weak, you're this, you're that. So it's confusing back then. I don't blame them for acting how they did because
that's it.
I don't
that's
know it. How to that's, communicate.
That's all they had. So I understood now I understand why he did what he did. And I can't hate him for that, you know, is what it is. I was kind of grateful that it was me and not my family. Sort of live and move on, and I just try to embody everything that I feel like a young me needed, you know.
And did you assert the responsibility to say you've got younger brothers? Did you feel like you now have to be the second figure for them in a sense of, do they train with you? Do you coach them?
Yeah. So the 26-year-old brother, he lives in New Zealand.
Okay.
But my 20-year-old brother, he lives here. And I'd never wanted to be another father to him. I didn't treat him the best when we were younger because of how I was treated and then how, like, seeing the things that he got away with. I was a shit big brother.
Right, really, so instead of sitting there and understanding at the time, this is my discipline, it was like, why do you get off? I'm going to pass it on. Yeah, okay.
So now it's more, I'm just trying to be the friend and the brother that he needed.
And do you train him? Does he fight out of the gym?
He does, yes.
He does,
yes. Very, very proud of him.
An exciting thing for you to see this transition you could potentially move into.
Yeah, because he's, you know, in my eyes, he's just my little pussy baby brother. Yep. You know, he's always that. And then seeing him fight and fucking beat up full-grown men is kind of cool.
That aha proud moment, hey?
Yeah.
Let's talk about you. We'll shift the narrative. I know that was a very, I would say, an emotional, connective piece, and I think a lot of people are going to connect to that. Let's talk about you. I don't want to keep you for too much longer. I know you got to get back to the gym. But what's next for you? I know, obviously, you know, you're going for the Queensland title, and then after that, the Australian title. What's the path look like for you? For those that want to pay attention, follow along. What's next?
Look, I'm just taking fights as I can get them.
Is it touching like because of the reputation? I know. Some boxing around the world, I think, is very money corrupted, but obviously in Australia, fortunately, it's not financially controlled. But do people avoid, because you can't move up the ranks unless the people of your level or higher want to fight you.
Yep.
So if they don't want to because of the risk of being knocked out, can they avoid you forever, or is there a rule that they have to fight you?
No, there's no rule that anyone has to fight anyone.
How are you supposed to get a belt if number one won't accept the fight?
You think about professional boxing like a business. And in business, transactions have to make sense, okay, for both parties. So let's say I try and fight rank number 5. I'm not sure who that is right now. But so he's got to risk fighting someone lower than him for something. So that risk usually has to be financial. So I'd be like, we'll fight for $3,000. No, why the fuck would I risk that for $3,000? Okay, I'll give it $10,000. No, why the fuck would I risk that for $10,000 when... purses are starting to get quite big here in Australia. You can get like 40, 50, 100 fucking million dollars for fights here in Australia now. So it has to be some sort of financial leeway for the higher guy
to accept the fight.
Correct.
And the younger guy, the lower rank, he doesn't care because it's his chance of getting
the higher
number, right?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so, well, for you, what's next for you? Are you in talks of this? Like, for you to get the Queensland title, does he want to fight?
Yes, he does.
So they're at least
not. Troy Pilch is the Queensland heavyweight champ now. We fought 5 months ago. We fought to a draw. And our rematch is looking to be roughly around July, August.
And this is for the title? You beat him, you will take the title?
Yes, correct.
And then from there, I guess for the people that just want to follow on, do you then have to fight the current Victorian or Sydney heavyweight in order to get to the Australian, or then you just automatically...
So, no, it's different. It's sort of like...
Who's the current Australian heavyweight?
Chris Terzewski.
Okay.
But he is fighting Django Opelu for that belt plus the Commonwealth very soon.
Okay.
And I'm not sure what happens thereafter. I think if you take the Commonwealth belt, you likely vacate and then go for higher things.
Okay.
Commonwealth belt is a very prestigious belt to have.
Yep. You know?
Because you've got all of the Commonwealth, so, and those people over there in England, they got a lot of money, so it's good to have that belt, get a couple 100%. Of cash grabs. So Chris Terzewski is the Australian champ right now, but that can change hands soon. So
for you, it's just get the Queensland one, and it's just keep moving up the ranks. Obviously, you're older in age now, but your physical shape is 10 years younger than who you were back then, so... Focusing now is just all about recovery is important.
Recovery,
keeping
massive.
Your mindset in the right frame. Because obviously, by the time these title comes, you're going to be 32, 33, 34. You know, So the biggest thing to avoid all that for you is just what is it, recovery, it's the headspace, yes. It's the environment of how you stay around.
100%. 100%. Environment is massive. Having peace at home is massive. Because fighting, training for, in a fight camp is a very stressful time. Yeah. It's a very, very stressful time. You're going to war with another man who's trained to fucking knock you out. So it's a very stressful time. So
at that level, they're not walk over street
fighting.
You're fighting someone you know.
When you're in the top 10, you make one mistake, that's it. You'll get knocked out. So that's where it's at. You're at a level now where, okay, I can't make a single mistake.
Yep.
Or I'm going to get pieced.
So, do you keep yourself in this headspace all year round? Because then when you get to a fight camp, you're already basically there because you're already in that discipline mindset? Or do you enjoy life outside of fight camps?
You try not to, but because I am older, I can't enjoy life too much.
Right, as in because the window for you to go from Queensland to Australia is not as...
I can get an injury waking up. I'm fucking old now, bro. If I get too lazy for too long, I won't get started.
So what's your training like at the moment? You train daily or do you focus on recovery just as much as training?
No, so I'm sponsored by Sports Recovery and Robina. So thankfully I get my recovery for free and I'll go there every day.
Yep.
Every day, and I spend
just ice baths, compression, all that sort of
compression,
stuff.
Compression, ice bath, sauna. They do got like cryo and stuff there. I do that a little bit as well. They keep me in tip top shape.
Yeah.
And I need it, man. If I don't go there 4 or 5 times a week, I feel it.
Yeah.
So my day starts at 4. I'll get up and do like my mobility and stretching, or not so much stretching, but just moving, getting the body moving again and activation of my lower body mostly. Then I'll do like my core and a little bit of resistant band stuff. And then I move on to, I'll do my cardio in the morning where I do like my sprints on the bike, stuff like that, go for a swim, whatever. And then I've got like personal sessions where I'm coaching people. Then I'll do like my weights and strength and conditioning roughly around about 10 a.m. in the morning. And then I'll do training again at night after I've done all the classes and stuff. Yep.
Spar? Do you spar every single day, or are you try and
no. I because I'm old, I don't spar as much.
Some of the boys, because they're all training at your gym, do they ever try and put it on you, or are they a bit intimidated?
No. People, even my boy, I think the respect level's there a bit too much, so they don't try.
Yeah.
I've got a couple of boys that could give me a good, really good crack, like a really good crack, but they just won't spar that way.
Yeah.
And that's cool, and I respect that, but I'm old, so I don't want to get chopped in the head too much.
I was going to say it's a combination of respect's a good thing, because if they do give you a good rib shot, it's not just going to be a nice, easy
recovery.
But at the same time, you do want to be pushed a little bit, because if you spar someone soft and then you go fight for the title, it's like, I'm not really prepped for this, am I? So, mate, I really appreciate that. Before I let you go, I just want to work, where can people find you? Obviously, Hammer Boxing Academy, for those that, if you're on the local Gold Coast, you're looking for, you know, what we've just spoken of that interests you. Instagram, what's your Instagram?
So Instagram, you've got Hammer Boxing Academy. My personal or my fighting page is just Hayes the Huntsman.
Yep.
Hayes.the.huntsman. I think that's the same for my TikTok and Facebook. Yeah. All of those are the same. It's either Hammer Boxing Academy or Hayes the Huntsman.
I appreciate it, mate. Guys, obviously, if anyone listened to that, I hope the message transcended that it's okay to be, you know, a strong man and show vulnerability and learn how to control it all instead of just letting your emotions win. So, Hayes, mate, I appreciate your time. Thank you for coming on. Guys, until next time.
So we nearly finished this episode. And just like you, I don't want our time together to come to an end. But the good news is, it doesn't have to. Because if you think I'm uncensored here, imagine what I get up to on my OnlyFans. Hit the link below and I will see you in there. Have fun.